Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 8, 2020. The U.S. Treasury Department slaps sanctions on South Sudan's first vice president. And the government of South Sudan recalls some Chinese-made drugs.
We are also alerting our inspectors at the ports of entry to make sure that whatever enters, these two companies do not have those products entering either individually or by any means.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Department of Treasury Office for Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, today sanctioned first Vice President of South Sudan, Taban Dengai, for his involvement in what the office calls serious human rights abuse, including the disappearance and deaths of civilians. In a statement released this past hour, the U.S. Treasury Office says Deng has, quote, acted to divide and sow distrust within the SPLM-IO and the broader Nuer community, which it says has extended the conflict in South Sudan and deteriorated the peace process. The statement also asserts that the South Sudan government's refusal to, quote, create political space for dissenting voices from the opposition parties, ethnic groups, civil society, or media has been a key factor in the country's inability to implement a peace agreement and ongoing acts of violence against civilians. The U.S. Deputy Treasury Secretary Justin Muzinich is quoted in the statement as saying Guy's attempt to silence the opposition party is derailing the country's ability to implement a peace agreement. It says Deng, as the first vice president, reportedly arranged and directed the disappearance and deaths of human rights lawyer Samuel Dong Luak and SPLM-IO member Agri Idri, both of whom were kidnapped in Kenya and later turned up in a South Sudan prison, according to at least one eyewitness. Muzinich says the United States calls on all nations to exclude from the international financial systems those who jeopardize South Sudan's future. The statement says the action is linked to Executive Order 13818, which implements the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act and targets perpetrators of serious human rights abuse and corruption. South Sudan in Focus reached out to Treasury Department for more clarification, but the call was not answered. South Sudan's Drug and Food Control Authority has recalled a number of medicines imported from two Chinese companies because the drugs do not meet international standards. The directive follows a similar medicine recall notice last month issued by the Ugandan National Drug Authority. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The recall stops the use of all medicines manufactured by Grand Pharmaceutical Limited and Sejiang Ruixin Pharmaceutical Company Limited. Mawen Atem, Secretary General of the South Sudan Drug and Food Control Authority, says the Joint Medical Stores, which is a non-governmental organization in Uganda that procures and distributes medicines, send alerts to all neighboring countries about the substandard medicines made in China. A January 6 letter from the South Sudan Drug and Food Control Authority lists the medicines and directs drug suppliers who buy and ship the medicines to immediately return those medicines for credit and provide replacement drugs. The list of the recalled drugs from the two companies include an oxytocin injection, a diclofenac injection, a quinine injection, a cloxacillin injection, a vitamin B injection, and a 25 milligram capsule of tetracycline, among others. Mawen says his agency wants all pharmacies, drug stores, and other health facilities across the country to screen their shipments for any medication manufactured by the two Chinese companies and report the medication to the Drug and Food Control Authority.
We are notifying the people who might come across that day so that they report it to us. Meanwhile, on our own, We are also alerting our inspectors at the ports of entry to make sure that whatever enters, they must have to make sure that these two companies do not have those products entering either individually or by any means.
Mawen says JMS will compensate dealers who bought medicine from the companies. He says South Sudanese consumers of pharmaceuticals from hospitals and other facilities should not take medicines manufactured by these companies.
The pharmaceutical outlets that bought the medicines can be refunded, given others. So sometimes if they know that they brought it in the right way, then they will notify us. And then also the companies that sold those products to them, we will have to make sure that our people are compensated in those forms, provided that they hold those things and they show that this is what we bought. We use something, but this is what is still there.
ATEM says all drug manufacturers must comply with international standards to ensure they produce quality medicine.
It was discovered through the inspection that they were not abiding with the requirement of the good manufacturing practice. So here, you can't convince the authority again that I can manufacture good medicines while you don't have that requirement. So that is one trick at actually the inspection.
Daniel Sedesigi, manager of Yonana Pharmaceutical Company in Juba's customs market, says he received the recall notice today but did not stock any medicine from either company.
I saw these two companies, Jinjin and the Grand Pharma. We are not using from them. We are free. Even when we are bringing the medicine before we are ordering, we are communicating with the companies. We have informed them we don't want to take medicine. We want to buy a high prices because if you give us bad medicine, is risky for us.
Uganda's National Drug Authority says the guidelines for a recall involve medications that could cause serious adverse reactions not stated in the package insert, unacceptable high frequency of adverse reactions which are mentioned in the package insert, or incorrect labeling and incorrect formulation. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
A South Sudan court has ordered local authorities in Juba's Kator Payam to stop leasing land. More than 8,000 households in Mijiki village took Kator Payam authorities to court 5 months ago for leasing land to powerful individuals. Judge Angoli Court ordered Kator authorities to allow residents of Kator Payam to acquire title deeds for their plots. Lasuba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
More than 100 Mijiki village residents clapped and ululated outside the courtroom after their lawyer, Kwe Achwe Bior, explained the impact of the judge's verdict.
So the verdict is in favor of the citizens. I'm very happy indeed after 8 years pursuing justice, finally we get it.
Some Mijiki residents say they settled in the area back in 2007, but were denied the opportunity to acquire the title deeds to their land. In 2013, the residents sued Kator Payam administrators, accusing them of using delaying tactics to deny them an opportunity to legally own plots while secretly leasing the land to non-residents. According to the residents, the Payam officials formed several committees and collected money from residents in order to demarcate the area, but used the money instead to make land deals with powerful individuals. In its final verdict today, the High Court ordered that title deeds issued to non-residents be cleared null and void. The court also ordered that plots of land in the village be registered anew to villagers. The court also ordered Kator Payam authorities to ensure that they return the plots of land to villagers they had sold or leased to non-residents over the past few years.
It came out that the procedures done by Kator Town Block, which is under Juba City Council, are void, null and void. So the all procedures cancelled, and all people residing in Mijiki area are given their rights. They are eligible to be given their houses. Each household have to get documents, legal document from Kator, any other authority.
34-year-old Mijiki resident Taban Isaac says he is delighted the court granted the villagers' rights.
I'm more than happy of what I've just witnessed today, and it is a clear indication that in South Sudan, rule of law is really functioning because of what I've just witnessed today. Because all this time, I never felt I'm living in my own country.
Speaking in Arabic, 39-year-old widow Jane Kiko says her land was sold by Qatar officials.
We suffered in that place. The court case started since 2013, and yet new other people had given our place, yet we suffered to clear the bush. What pained us was because we were pushed out of here. All I want now is to stay in the area with my children. There's no other place to go to.
Speaking in Arabic, Laura Matai Lokiko blames Qatar officials for not standing with the villagers from the beginning.
We thanked the court because it has given us our right. We waited for long because the administration of Qatar did not stand with us. They were the one demarcating the area to other people.
Bior is urging the court to deliver justice in a timely fashion, which he says can affect the lives of many ordinary citizens. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Sudan's transitional government has dissolved dozens of institutions, including four media outlets, as part of its campaign to crack down on the activities of members of former long-time ruler Omar al-Bashir. The government says some of the individuals connected to the entities used public funds to enrich themselves. Michael Atit reports for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The transitional government says a committee it formed to investigate institutions linked to the former regime found that many of those institutions mismanaged national resources to benefit of certain individuals. Speaking last night in Arabic to reporters in Khartoum, Taha Osman Ishaq, a member of the investigative committee, says the panel agreed to freeze all financial assets of Al Shuruq TV, Al Taiba TV, and two Sudanese newspapers. They assert receiving funds from al-Bashir regime for years.
We recommend it to dissolve the Holy Quran Association and freeze all its assets and direct its management to the Ministry of Finance, and should be administered by the Ministry of Religious Affairs. The account of African International University should be audited as from the year June 1, 1989. Confiscation of the National Congress Party's headquarters and freeze all its financial and movable assets.
The committee also dissolved the Sudanese Bar Association and all national and state trade unions. Osman says the committee will work to reclaim all national assets that were privatized by the previous regime.
These decisions are in line with the constitutional document and in line with the law and with the objectives of the revolution, which call for dissolving the previous regime and reclaim the public funds. Some of these decisions are eligible for appeal, but they should do so within the context of the law.
He urged the public to offer any relevant information that would help in the investigation. Sousan Mahjoub, a Sudanese journalist who has worked for Al Sudani Arabic Daily newspaper since 2012, calls the sweeping decision to shut down so many institutions as a violation of one of the core goals of the Sudanese revolution, press freedoms.
To suspend a media outlet at this crucial time is very unfortunate. That is why we are calling on the transitional government, which has been calling for a freedom justice, to revoke their decision. Otherwise, the freedom they are calling for is meaningless.
Mahjoub says her newspaper is a self-funded institution, adding it did not receive any funds from the previous regime. She says her paper will fight the decision.
We will organize ourselves and go to meet the committee and explain to them our situation. We shall also engage other journalist colleagues to demand the reopening of our newspaper.
The committee was formed in December with a mandate to reclaim all public assets, freeze financial accounts of all entities believed to have been funded by the previous regime, and investigate allegations of government corruption. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some civilians in Cameroon attack rebel fighters. Find out more when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
does hard work really pay off?
If someone digs a hole in the 30 years, of course, should be able to get to the goal on the ground. So hard work pays, of course.
To me, in my own opinion, it pays. Because when you work hard, doesn't mean you have targets you want to achieve. So by putting more heart, that means you can achieve a desired target you want to aspire in life.
Lazy people are mostly not successful in life. So hard work pays.
Hard work really pays, because if you are not working hard, you're not going to get anything. Even if your workplace, you're not getting the normal money for what you're working for. As long as you're working hard, you definitely get what you want.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Residents of several communities in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions have attacked at least five camps belonging to separatist fighters. The villagers accuse the rebels of destroying civilian homes, looting and killing innocent people. The angry civilians say they do not know who they can rely on, as the military also commits similar crimes. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the English-speaking town of Bamenda in Cameroon.
A group of 150 women and children in the northwestern village of Babungo sing a song against Anglophone rebels. They sing that they will together fight the separatists who they say have been abusing villagers. The leader of the group, 55-year-old farmer Marie Najela, says rebels in December accused her husband of helping Cameroon's military and then killed him.
The one for key we all, but for here we don't deny.
Najela says they are saying no to separatist plans to either eliminate all of them or see them suffer. She says all of them, including women and children, must work together to protect each other and their property. The women and children on Tuesday sang and marched to the house of their local traditional ruler, Ndofwa Zofia. Villagers saved him from being abducted on Monday night by seven rebel fighters who they managed to chase off. Zofia says he is grateful to his people and angry with the rebels who say they are fighting for the rights of English-speaking Cameroonians. Why should my people and I be tortured like this? He asks. Zofia says the rebels have abducted candidates for the local council and parliamentary elections, looted, collected ransoms, and killed civilians. He says enough is enough. Babungo is not the only Anglophone village in Cameroon with growing anti-separatist feelings over rebel abuses. Authorities, local media reports, and a rebel spokesman confirmed villagers have been attacking separatist camps. Last week, people from the English-speaking village of Balikumbat stormed rebel camps and seized their guns, along with items stolen from them, including goats and cows. The villagers say the retaliation was sparked after rebels stole a taxi driver's motorcycle because he refused to give them $10 in support. Cameroon's rebels have confirmed their fighters committed abuses. On Sunday, separatist fighters in the southwestern town of Kumba killed their commander, say local media reports, because he ordered them to torture civilians. Tapang Ivo Tanku is a U.S.-based spokesman for one rebel group, the Anglophone Defense Forces. Speaking via WhatsApp, he says they have ordered their fighters, who he calls soldiers, to arrest anyone who abuses villagers, including fellow rebels.
We are strongly condemning all of these soldiers who are turning their weapons against civilians or who are stealing civilians' properties and not protecting civilians. This is adversely affecting the revolution.
But Tanku also accused the government of often framing rebels to tarnish the image of those fighting for the independence of English-speaking regions from French-majority Cameroon. Governor of the English-speaking Northwest region, Deben Chofo, denies any such manipulation. He says government troops are gaining public confidence and working to bring peace.
The security forces, the administration, the traditional rulers, and the entire population are doing their best to bring back a normal civil life. We are enjoying relative calm, even if we still have hot spots.
Rights groups accuse both Cameroon's military and separatists of using excessive force during 3 years of armed conflict. Unrest broke out in Cameroon's English-speaking regions in 2016 when teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of the French language and French-speaking officials. Rebels took up arms a year later, demanding a separate English-speaking state they call Ambazonia. The conflict with Cameroon's military since then has killed about 3,000 people, many of them villagers, caught up in the fighting. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Babungu, Cameroon.
From Cameroon, we move to neighboring Uganda, where authorities have released 9 Rwandan nationals who had been arrested in Uganda during recent tensions between the two neighbors. Rwanda's government calls the move a positive step towards mending relations, but says more needs to be done. Halima Athumani has details from Kigali.
Before journalists in Kampala Wednesday, Ugandan officials produced release forms for 9 Rwandan nationals who were in their custody for months. The release is a goodwill move by Uganda toward Rwanda after tensions flared last year over shooting incidents along the border. The 9 Rwandans released are Urayaneza Gilbert, Mugabo Nelson, retired Sergeant René Rutagungira, Etienne Nsanzabahizi, Claude Yakalemie, Emmanuel Ruamucho, Augustine Rutaisire, Munyangabe Adrian, and Corporal Nzeyamana Haman. Sam Kutesa, Uganda's Minister for Foreign Affairs, says the move to withdraw charges against the 9 is part of an effort to de-escalate tension.
It is the hope of the Uganda government that the Rwandese authorities will reciprocate the gesture of goodwill that we are making today, and further assure you that any outstanding issues and concerns will be addressed in an open and transparent manner.
The release is in line with the recent memorandum of understanding between Uganda and Rwanda aimed at normalizing relations between the two countries. Rwanda's ambassador to Uganda, Frank Mugambage, called the move a step in the right direction towards smoothing bilateral relations and keeping the border open. Mugambage said he hopes Uganda will follow today's release with further action, including dealing with people the Rwandan government considers anti-Rwandan elements operating from Ugandan territory. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
A civil law court in Liberia ruled Tuesday that operating license of Punch FM and TV be restored. The government of Liberia in 2018 revoked the station's operating license on grounds that the license was acquired fraudulently. Journalist Patrick Honana, who owns the station, is a strong critic of President George Weah's government. As Moses reports from Monrovia, the government lawyers have filed an appeal to the Liberian Supreme Court.
After a series of complaints to different human rights groups and diplomatic missions about being denied the rights to operate a media house, journalist Patrick Horner saw the wisdom of the court as a final result. Ifa Taitin counts against the Ministry of Information for withholding his legally acquired registration and frequency papers, among which he argues prevented him from opening his radio and TV station. However, the government argued that Horner's license was acquired fraudulently. But his verdict on Tuesday, civil law court judge Peter Benuwali said the court took into consideration 6 of the 13 counts and concluded that Mr. Horner acquired his document legally. As such, the judge said the station's rights to operate be restored.
The petitioner later obtained its article incorporation on January 5, 2018, and this respondent granted a permit to the petitioner on January 10, 2018. This court perceives no deception and misrepresentation on the facts and circumstances in this case, and that the permit granted the petitioner on January 10, 2018 is valid. And in view of the foregoing, it is the ruling of this honorable court that the petitioner's petition for declaratory judgment is hereby granted and the resistance thereto is denied. The petitioner is entitled to its permit as a matter of law.
Soon after the judge's ruling, government lawyers, led by Councillor Wise A. Wise, announced an appeal to the Supreme Court of Liberia. In June 2018, the government began a revision of all media operational licenses and authorization. Mr. Horner's Punch FM license was revoked on grounds that the station did not meet the authorization standards. Horner said this following Judge Peter Benuwali's ruling on Tuesday.
This has been long since coming. We all know that it was just as a result of personal vendetta, anger, and marginalization that led us to where we are today. Those are the vestiges of the past. Those vestiges of the past were resurrecting. We like to thank the court for such a ruling.
For the last 2 years, human rights activists have criticized the government's decision to deny Punch FM and TV station the right to operate. Mr. Horner had argued that he was singled out because he had been critical of President Weah during the 2017 elections. The court ruling came a day after anti-government protesters demanded the government restore the station's permit to operate. Senator Ibrahim Darius Dillon, an executive of the Council of Patriots, organizers of Monday's anti-government protests, observed Tuesday's court hearing and had this to say.
The legitimacy of Punch FM is no longer in question. The court has clearly defined that and has ruled on that. Let me place myself on record. I got no faith in the Supreme Court of Liberia. Inasmuch as President George Weah does not want Punch FM to operate, the court would not muster the courage to allow it. It is a challenge. I hope the court can prove me wrong, but I don't have faith in the court bench.
Media activists called the lower court's ruling as a victory for press freedom and called on the Liberian Supreme Court to issue its opinion on the case as soon as possible. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
And now back to our first story regarding the sanctioning of South Sudan's first vice president. Again, Ring Machar, spokesperson for first vice president Taban Dengai, says the sanctions are misplaced, but he has not had any official response from the Kiir administration on the U.S. sanctions. He says they are misplaced because Deng's record on peacemaking, quote, speaks for itself. Agel alleges that Taban was one of the signatories of the revitalized peace deal. And that's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Longonyo by Colonel Mido.
Sabi Guru shuta ki dema bodita visa mae Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe.
We've been listening to Colonel Mido with the song Longonyo. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of this show. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Guru shuta ki dema bido funita ya sabi Taki de ma bodita fisa mae Saidu masakine Saidu akwana kulwe.